Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
W. Somerset Maugham said, "If you refuse to accept anything but the best, you very often get it." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who refuses to accept anything but the best. Today's Playmaker has 40 design professionals in North Texas. With us today is a managing partner who designs schools for 21st century learning. This great Playmaker is Mark Seeley. Mark is managing principal of PBK Architects in Dallas. Mark brings a level of service that encompasses more than 35 years of extensive experience in planning, design, construction, and management of a wide variety of mixed-use, educational, hospitality, corporate, and commercial projects. For more than 35 years, PBK has served as an award-winning pioneer for architectural and engineering design solutions for clients in education, healthcare, sports, and corporate business. PBK embraces a unique business culture that prioritizes customer service in order to deliver custom solutions. Mark's experience ranges from corporate interior design services to higher educational facilities to major mixed-use projects. He has served in a leadership capacity for the delivery of professional design services in multiple countries, including Libya, Saudi Arabia, Belarus, Turkey, Brazil, and multiple Latin American countries. With all that, Mark, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you, sir.
Well, you've worked for a number of architectural firms in your career. Marketing, business development, and management seem to stand out. So how did you develop those skills in addition to your skill of architecture?
Well, very early in my career, I had the opportunity to participate in securing work for the Lake Placid Winter Olympics. And at that point in time in my career, I was not aware that there was a function within the architectural community that would be business development and marketing. It was something that came natural to me. I enjoy talking to people. I enjoy communicating with people. If you take the StrengthFinders test, it says I'm a woo, which means winning others over. Okay, and that's sort of my personality. And it led very easily into trying to find ways to convince clients to hire my firm and myself for projects. And it just grew. And I had a gentleman who I worked with who was in that position with a large firm, and he encouraged me. And he gave me the rule that you need to be in the profession for at least 6 years before you take on this role in a permanent capacity. You have to know what you're talking about. You have to practice architecture to be able to promote architecture. And that's what I did. And it just grew from there.
Did you realize you had that skill prior to going into architecture, or did that develop after you got into the business?
I realized I had somewhat of that skill set because I convinced the firm that the owner of the firm I was eventually going to work with that he should hire me over more experienced people. And he basically said that it was your personality and the way you convinced me to hire you is the reason I hired you. And so I sensed that there was something there that was different. And I will also tell you that my passion wasn't in a lot of the other areas of architecture. And there are a variety of ways you can go in this profession. But my passion was more in client service and people skills and dealing with clients.
Well, the most important sale is the sale of yourself, and you obviously did that with your boss. You mentioned Lake Placid. Back, maybe 37 years ago or so, there was an Olympics in Lake Placid, and you were very involved with that. You designed or involved the architecture of the building where the hockey games were played. Tell us a little bit about that story of what you did, how you were involved, and who you met.
Well, I did have the good fortune of my first job out of college being with a firm called HOK. And they sent me to Lake Placid as the resident planner for the village of Lake Placid to prepare them for the Winter Olympics. And in that position, I was able to be involved with the Olympic Organizing Committee. And through that, positioned our company to be considered for winning that project. And through a whole host of different activities, we were awarded the project. And in doing so, I was allowed to participate in the design team. I had the good fortune then of working on the project. As you well know, it was the home of all of the figure skating and ice hockey events for the games in 1980. But between 76, which is when I left Lake Placid, and 1980, I was here in Dallas and working as an architect. But I was invited back by the Olympic Organizing Committee as a special guest. And I went back for 2 weeks, and in doing so, I was given the title of Director of Seating for the VIP section of the Olympics within the arena. And I was able to seat notable individuals as Lord Kalanin, who had his own two seats, and nobody else could sit in them but Lord Kalanin, the King and Queen of Sweden, Crown Prince of Norway, Crown Prince of Japan, Terry Bradshaw. I mean, whoever was a celebrity, they would come to our section and sit. So I sort of rubbed elbows. I didn't really get to know them.
That was an opportunity of a lifetime.
Yes, it was. And you don't realize it when you're at that age, how important it is. But it was wonderful. And I was then very lucky to be able to see the Miracle on Ice and witness that first row center ice, basically, right behind the Soviet hockey team. And after that, I was calling in on a Dallas radio show, giving them updates on the Olympics. And I'm on the phone, and Herb Brooks walked by. And I have his signature on my Olympic credentials.
Herb Brooks was obviously the famous coach for the Miracle on Ice of 1980.
That's correct.
Pulled together a ragtag team of individuals that he said has no right and couldn't win the games. And he pulled them together and made it happen.
Yes.
And that Miracle on Ice, for most people that don't remember, was not the finals. That was the semifinals.
Correct.
Against the Soviets.
And it was a tape delay. See, people know that it was supposed to be that the television network wanted to make it prime time. And the gentleman who was in charge of that, Bob Allen, a friend of mine, would not allow that to happen. He said, the Olympics are for the athletes. They're not for the spectators. And we're going to keep the schedule as it was intended.
Well, with your broadcasting to Dallas radio station, you were ESPN before there was an ESPN.
I guess so.
You've been managing principal here in Dallas since September of 2014, I believe.
That's correct.
Tell us a little bit about PBK Architects and your role with the company.
Well, PBK started about 35 years ago, and we're in a number of offices throughout the state of Texas. We focus on education. K through 12 is the biggest portion of the service line that we deliver. We also provide architecture, engineering, facilities. We have a variety of other services, but they're all to some degree associated with education. In my role as the managing principal, then I manage the North Texas offices. We do have an office director in our Fort Worth office, but he and I work together to manage the two North Texas offices in Dallas and Fort Worth. And my responsibility is operations management and to some degree business development.
And you've been doing this for a number of years. You've worked with a number of companies prior to being here. So you've been here now for, what I say, 2014, now 3 years.
Yeah, that's correct. But I was here before and left to take on an assignment overseas and then came back.
You graduated with a degree in architecture.
Correct.
Why architecture?
Interesting question. When I was a youngster and I guess a teenager, I had an uncle who was a carpenter and had gone to 1 year of architecture school, and he had a bunch of architectural tools laying around. And I started playing with him and started being inquisitive as to what this all meant.
What age? How old were you with him?
10, 11, 12, maybe. And I put it on the back burner, and then an architect came to my high school and said, we're going to teach a class in drawing as in your junior year. And all of a sudden, a light bulb went on. And I started taking it, and I ended up being number one in the class for 2 years and then decided that that was my passion and never thought about another career. Started out in architecture school and graduated with a master's degree.
And my guess is you were number one probably because of your passion. Not necessarily your skill at that time.
Yes, I would say it was my passion, but I think it has something to do with woo, the winning others over. I had a way of getting with the professors and understanding what they wanted to be accomplished and working towards that, not letting my ego get in the way of what I delivered.
Helped to get better grades when you knew exactly what your professors wanted to have, too. I have this question I'm going to ask you. You've probably answered the question already, but what role does relationship building play now in your life and in business since you are a woo, winning others over?
I would say it's a major part of my life, not only in business but in the personal life. My philosophy about business is developing friends first, and if they become a business associate, great. If not, you still have a great friend. And so I have a tremendous number of friends in the industry that I work in that are not clients, but they're friends. Sometimes they do become clients, and that's special. And when they become clients, we have a relationship that's based upon a friendship that we can take with us into the business world. I continue to enjoy the relationship building. I associate myself with organizations where you can grow relationship building. And have been very fortunate to not only join those organizations, but become a leader in those organizations. And it's always paid off. It's always been a benefit to me.
There is something within PBK that I saw that are PBK laws.
Correct.
Were you? I'm going to ask you about those, but were you involved in putting those 12 laws together? Or were they part of PBK prior to your becoming a part of the company?
They've been part of PBK for a long time. Dan Boggio, our CEO and president, basically founded this company on those laws. And some of them developed after the first started, but they're all based on one factor, and that is the client. It's Dan's philosophy is what he calls, and we follow, obsessive client service. And it has been extremely successful for us and this company. It's not like any other firm I've ever been associated with. And I told him just recently at a dinner, I said, Dan, the only regret I have is that I didn't meet you 20 years ago. And I'm very, very sincere about that.
With your background of winning others over and knowing what these laws are, I can see why. And this is really the culture of PBK, more so than just laws. Know your real job, be a leader, be responsive. And then it gets into, as you talked about the client, be a warrior for your client. Which
Correct.
Means what?
It means stand up for your client at every chance you get. We even believe that we should take responsibility for things that the client does sometimes and let that responsibility be on our shoulders. Make the client look like a winner in all cases. We like to try to make the client successful not only in his business life but in his personal life. And so we will find ways that we can make their business life easier so that their personal life is easier for them. So we want to be a warrior for the client. We want to stand up for them, and we want to take their sides in every instance.
What I also hear is that you take their problems also away from them.
We do. That's what we like to do. And we don't want the clients to have a problem. We want to take the problem, and we want to solve them for the client so that they know that we're looking out for their best interest. We want to treat their money as if it were our money.
As I'm reading these and knowing that you're a woo, winning others over, these seem to tie in with Mark Seeley, too. And we're speaking again with Mark Seeley. Mark is a managing principal in Dallas for PBK Architects. And it's a very simple website, PBK.com. I'm looking at the PBK laws, and the next one I am reading is make your client the hero in every case. Be a friend to your client. That's basically what you just said. I mean, it's a friendship you develop.
Right.
And you keep the client.
Correct.
It's what I would think clients for life.
That is exactly what we want to do. And in a lot of cases, Dan and other partners have had clients for 15 or 20 years. Where they've built a friendship and a professional relationship where they service the client to the best of their abilities, and they build a friendship. And in a lot of cases, it happens to be a friendship that goes out beyond the business, and they do things personally together. There's nothing better to have a friend and a client at the same time.
Continue a few more. When you make a mistake that causes a problem, never make excuses.
Never make excuses. Always accept the fact that you made a. If there's a problem and you created it, you stand up and you take responsibility for that problem and you solve whatever the outcome that that problem created.
I would think in architecture, no matter how much time and effort you put into making it perfect, when reality hits and the building is being built, there are problems.
There is no perfect project. It just can't happen. There's too many things that go on within the industry, and there's such a wide variety of people who participate, not just the architects, but the coordination with the structural engineer and the mechanical engineer and the civil engineer and all of the other consultants that participate in the project. There are things that happen that just cannot be predicted or forecast, and therefore you have to have the attitude that you're going to take that problem and solve it and not let it be the client's problem.
As I'm hearing you say this, you're almost putting a protective bubble around that client, letting them know that should anything happen, you're there to protect them and their project.
Absolutely.
Because the last one is never settle for simply satisfying your client.
No, and that is a philosophy that we strongly believe in, and that is we understand what the expectation levels are of the client, and we don't try to achieve those. We try to achieve something beyond their expectations, whether that's delivering a project that's earlier than they expected, whether that's delivering a set of drawings earlier than they expected, whether that's coming in under the budget on a project because what we're trying to do is save that client money, or giving clients money back at the end of the projects that they had in a retainage, for example. It goes in a lot of different areas. One example is that we were doing a particular project, and part of the project was to design a logo for that particular school on the floor in a nice material, and it was to be of a small size, let's say 3 feet in diameter. And to exceed our client's expectation, we increased it to like 10 feet in diameter so that it had a greater impact. And the client didn't know that until they came in and were blown away that we had gone to the trouble to do that for them. It's exceeding their expectations that we do.
And thinking beyond what they thought was right. The skill of architecture is visual. You see something. Sometimes the client doesn't see it either. You're putting that into possibly a drawings on paper or a 3D model of what it's going to look like. I work with people on visualization, but I have a hard. I can see the end result of architecture and say that looks really nice. I have no idea how you got there. That must be a great skill to be able to pull from your clients what they may not know and put it in reality, and they say that's exactly what I'm looking for.
It is a great skill, and fortunately I have a tremendous group of people around me who have a lot more skill at that than I do, and we utilize them tremendously to do that. What we do is we design a project that meets the client's expectations, not our vision. We're not there to design a project that is something we want. It's something they want. And as a result, we go way out of our way to try to pull from the client all of their visions so that we can see how we can interpret their visions into the final project.
So ego and pride of coming up with something different is pulled out of it. Your pride is in doing what the client wants.
Absolutely. You don't have an ego when you're working with a client and you're trying to solve their problems. You don't try to convince a client that you know better than them about their projects, their buildings, their culture. You absorb that information and you try to translate it into a real product that then is exactly what the client wants to see when it's finished.
Even though your experts mentioned K-12 in the school system, it's still separate. What that client wants is what they want.
Correct.
And you're taking your expertise from other projects you've worked on.
Correct. And we do try to challenge the client and say, here are some new directions and trends in education that you need to be aware of. And we see it going in this direction, and we'd like to suggest to you that we do an option, for example, that considers these new directions. And let's talk to you about it and see if this fits into what your vision is for your school district as you grow forward. Sometimes it's something they want. Other times they're very comfortable in traditional ways, and we deliver that also.
Well, you became interested in architecture at, you said, about 11 years of age.
Correct.
You found out that you're a woo, winning others over, which got you into marketing and business development. But did you ever think you'd be in management?
Not early, no, because I didn't really think about it, to be quite honest with you. Early in your career as an architect, you're in some form of designing or production or project management and dealing with clients. And for me, I was early in my career in master planning, which got me into Lake Placid, for example, and in design of architecture. And that's what I focused my energies on. And I still had in the back of my mind this whole idea of clients and business development and things of that nature. But I focused on learning architecture through those areas. So, no, I didn't really think about it early.
My guess is that it was a natural for you, since winning others over is a part of what management's all about.
Yes, I think you're correct. I didn't go to school to learn management skill sets. I most probably wish I had have, but I didn't. It's all been learning from other people who were my mentors as I grew up, and trying to find out what they did well and what they did poorly, and learn from both of those experiences and take those with me as I move forward.
So your sounds like the bulk of your learning came after you graduated school.
Correct.
In terms of your business career.
That is correct.
Do you practice much architecture right now, or other than just getting involved with what your associates are doing?
I do practice architecture at various levels. I most probably am doing more of the planning side of architecture than I am of building designs. But in the recent past, I have been involved in some design work and some planning work, and I thoroughly enjoy getting back to that. But that's not my primary role in this firm, and so that's only in a limited engagement.
Based on what I'm hearing about you, your personality, and the PBK laws, you probably really have a good time on a daily basis doing what you do.
I do. I thoroughly do. I tell you what, having a good time is working with an organization that has a philosophy very similar to your own personal philosophy, so that you can totally embrace it. And working with a group of extremely talented individuals who all follow the same philosophy and they're talented to boot. We have a design team that works with us that I have never seen a better design team. We have a partnership within the company that all believes in the same cultural value of client service. And so when something comes up that you would normally wonder whether or not we would take a particular direction, for example, with a client, there is no wonder. I know what they're going to choose. It's to take the client's position. And so it makes things a lot easier for you.
Decisions are much easier.
Correct.
When that happens ahead of time. Well, tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you and PBK.
Well, PBK.com is a pretty easy website, and I can be reached through the PBK.com site. I can also be reached personally at mark.seely, S-E-I-L-E-Y, at PBK.com. Or you can reach us at our office phone here in Dallas, 972-233-1323.
Which is also on our website, playmakerstalkshow.com. This has been a terrific show. We just spoke with Mark Seely, Managing Principal of PBK Architects. And thank you, Mark, for being a playmaker.
Delighted. Thank you, sir.
And for being a guest on the show. It's been great having you. And thanks to all of you for listening and joining us. Join us again at playmakerstalkshow.com, where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's playmakerstalkshow.com. And we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.